producer.
Well, series of Shiurim and Inyanei Hashkofa. Last week we spoke about what we could prove about Hashem. It was clear that we could prove not only Hashem's existence, but many things that we know about Hashem. We prove not only that HaKadosh Baruch Hu exists, but that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is one and not two, is not more than one. That HaKadosh Baruch Hu is not physical, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is above time and space, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has no characteristics. We prove that it can't be what other people worship as a god, as an Avodah Zarah. And there are other ways to prove it as well. We just use the most classic proof, the proof from the first cause, that's in all the Rishonim. There's other proofs as well. It's well known, the proof from design. And we're going to Rabbi Chanan Wasserman mentions that. The Chovis Halvovis has it by Arichas. And it's really in a Medrash. The Apikiris came to Rabbi Akiva, and he asked Rabbi Akiva, who made the world? Rabbi Akiva said, Hashem. The Apikiris said to Rabbi Akiva, how do you know? And Rabbi Akiva said, who made your shirt? To the Apikiris, who made your shirt? The Apikiris said, a tailor made my shirt. Rabbi Akiva says, how do you know? Maybe your shirt came by accident. Maybe, and I'm paraphrasing here, that millions of years of happy accidents in some desert put together a bunch of cotton plants and then ripped apart the cotton plants, pulled out the cotton, and tore the cotton into threads, then wove the threads by accident, of course, millions and millions of years, sewn the cotton, tore the cotton into threads, and then wove the cotton into an exact shape of a shirt. Now, of course, a shirt has a collar, a shirt has sleeves, a shirt has buttons and buttonholes and all of that. Now, in those days, I don't know what shirts had. But it's the same. It's the same question that we would have nowadays to the Apikiris. How do you know that billions of years of happy accidents did not produce your shirt? And the answer is, Rabbi Akiva said, just like the shirt testifies to the existence of a tailor, so too the world testifies to the existence of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's absolutely silly for people to believe that there's no Ribbono Shel Olam. Absolutely silly. It makes absolutely no sense. The question, though, is, how come there's so many people that don't believe in Ribbono Shel Olam? And from those that don't believe in that do believe in Ribbono Shel Olam, how about all the idol worshippers throughout history? Today, well, today there are a lot of idol worshippers as well. According to many poskim, the Christians are idol worshippers. They're idol worshippers for the simplest reason, because as we discussed last week, Hashem is kuloi poshut. Hashem can have no attributes. He can't be quantified. And the Christians believe that there's such a thing as a trinity, that the Borei Olam is three, but he's really one. He's one, but he's really three. And the Ramban, in Maimar HaVikuach, when he was discussing this, debating this with the Christians, they really had, he brought this up to them, they really had no answer. He asked them, "Are they one? Is Hashem one? Is Hashem three?" And basically they stuttered and they stumbled and they didn't really have much of an answer, and basically they said it's a Gzeres HaKosuf, that he's three but he's one, and we really can't understand any of this. Now, the truth of the matter is, the reason why the Christians came up with this Trinity idea was because the Christians incorporated into their religion a lot of paganism and a lot of simple idol worship, because they wanted to be makariv, the pagans and the idol worshippers. And so Christianity is a mixture of what they lifted out of Judaism, what they lifted out of paganism, what they lifted out of various different idol worshipping religions. And so there are idol worshippers today. According to Christianity, it's not possible for the Borei Olam to be kuloi poshut. What we know Hashem to be kuloi poshut, that precludes any trinity or anything like that. But what about the idol worshippers throughout history? Do we really think that the idol worshippers were all dumb people? People had IQs just as much as they do today. And we have people in the olden days, and even people nowadays, that believe in all sorts of crazy things. They believe in totem pole worship. They believe in all sorts of avodah zarah. How is it possible that people intelligent people could have been over Avodah Zarah. And nowadays, worse than Avodah Zarah are the atheists. At least the Avodah Zarah worshippers believe that the world had to have a creator, or the world had a creator. They just believe that it was created by an Avodah Zarah. The Rambam says how Avodah Zarah evolved. There is such a thing as evolution, but it's not people that evolved, it's Avodah Zarah religions that evolved. And the way the Avodah Zarah religions evolved was at the beginning, all the idol worshippers knew that Hashem created the world. Even the Goyim understood the world has a Siba Rishayna, a first cause, but they figured that this first cause, he's too high and mighty to involve himself with the world, and that there's no Hashgacha. And so they believe that the Borei Olam, the creator of the world, the Siba Rishayna, had given over the running of the world to the stars, to the moon, to the sun, to Zman and Mokum. Then slowly their religion evolved, and they started believing that those agents of God, those that they thought were agents of God, were God himself. But at least they believed the world had a creator. The atheists nowadays, they don't believe the world had a creator altogether. That makes absolutely no sense. We discussed it last week. We know it this week. Everybody knows that. But the question is, how is it possible and why is it that there are atheists in the world? That's the topic of tonight's lecture. After we understand that the existence of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, at the very least the existence, but the truth is more than the existence of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Many things we know about HaKadosh Baruch Hu is proven. How is it that there's such a thing as people that don't see this? And we're going to cover two answers in our Svarim. And the two answers are very, very similar. There's one by Rebbe Elchanan Wasserman and one from the Yismach Moshe. First, Rebbe Elchanan. Rebbe Elchanan in Maimar al Hamuna. He explains, he asked the question the way we asked it. Kasher nizboinan b'zeh nimtza, when we think about this, we'll conclude. Ki ha'amuna sh'akadosh baruch hu boras ha'olam, belief that Hashem created the world, hu muchreches l'chol ben das. It's obvious, it's proven, it's conclusive to anybody, any intelligent person, imrak yotza mechlal shoita, so long as he's not an idiot. If that's true, he says also, v'ein soyuch klal l'shum philosophy l'hasigas ha'yidiyah hazois. You don't need any deep philosophy, you don't have to be a great chacham, you don't have to be a great wise man to understand this. Everybody can understand this. And he quotes the Chovos HaLevavos, he quotes our Svarim, he quotes the Chovos HaLevavos, who says that if a person were to take a look at a page of writing, never mind the page of writing right now, take the entire Shas, Gans Shas, and I were to tell you, you know how this Shas came about? Shas came about because there was a monkey playing on a word processor, and the monkey accidentally created Shas. He's just tapping on the keys, and he created Shas. Now, the Chovos HaLevavos doesn't use a word processor. He has a page of writing, and somebody spilled ink, and the ink accidentally created the writing. That'd be silly. The world is infinitely more complex than a page of writing, and if you would think that the page of writing could not come by accident, how could you think the world came by accident? It's conclusive. It's definite. The question is, how come there are people that don't see this? And this is his answer. In order for a person to come to the truth, in order for a person to come to a correct and valid judgment on any topic, more important than him being intelligent, more important than him being a wise man, is that he has to be objective. It's very simple. Let's say you were in court, and your life was at stake, and you know that the judge took bribe. He took a bribe from the district attorney. The district attorney gave the judge, not a big bribe, let's say $10,000. $10,000 to convict you. Now you go over to the judge and you say, "Judge, you were bribed." And the judge says, "Don't worry, I'm an intelligent person. I will not I will not distort justice, and if you're innocent, I will find you innocent. Now, of course, we're talking in a case where the judge didn't consciously agree to find you guilty to the person that gave him bribery, just somebody deposited $10,000 in the judge's bank account, and he told the judge, okay, find this guy guilty. Question, would you trust that judge? You wouldn't trust that judge. What if the judge had a very high IQ? Would that help? You wouldn't trust that judge. What if the judge was a very wise man? Would you trust the judge? For $10,000, you would think that this wise man would distort justice? Well, of course you would. Because as the Pasuk says, Shoyched Yaver Einei Pikchim V'Yisalef Divrei Tzadikim, that Shoyched blinds the eyes of the wise. And no matter how wise a person is, if he's not objective, so it's very possible that this person is not going to find the truth even though it's staring him in the face. And you find it all the time. People ask this question all the time. If you just take a look at what's happening in the court system, and you have you just pay a little attention, you'll ask questions and you'll say, well, this and this person, he's obviously innocent. Why did they find him guilty? Or this and this person's obviously guilty. Why did they find him innocent? How many times are people found innocent even though evidence is clear that he's guilty, and vice versa? And very, very often, the answer is going to be that there was a bias amongst the jurors. And if there's a bias amongst the judge or a bias amongst the jurors, then it's very likely that no matter how strong the evidence is, the truth is not going to come out. And so, every human being in this world is a judge. And he has to judge whether he wants to be a maimin or a kaifer. If he wants to believe in Hashem or he doesn't want to believe in Hashem. Now remember, if a judge received $10,000 bribe, you wouldn't trust him. And how much bribe does a person receive not to believe in Hashem? If a person believes in Hashem, what's the result? The result is that he has to do mitzvahs. The result is that he has to be Mekayim the Torah. The result is that he can't go to the ball game anymore on Shabbos. The result is that he can't eat in Domino's pizza anymore. The result is that he has to keep all the mitzvahs. And not only does he have to keep all the mitzvahs, that he every moment of the day he has a din v'cheshbin lifnei miyat to'osid litein din v'cheshbin. Every moment of the day, v'chol ma'asecha nechtovim, everything is written in a sefer, everything that a person does. $10,000 is nothing compared to that. The hefkerus, the freedom that a person has to not to believe, the freedom that a person has to be a kofer, is a tremendous shoychad. How in the world is a person supposed to be objective? How in the world is a person supposed to be able to make a logical judgment? How in the world is a person supposed to be able to see the truth? And the teretz is, says Rabbi Chanan, that's why we have so many kofrim out there. It's not that we have so many people that are so unintelligent that they cannot see the evidence, but rather, we have so many people that are so bribed, and they're not capable of overcoming, or they don't want, they choose not to overcome the bribery. So you can have some of the most intelligent people in the world, some of the most intelligent people in the history of the world. You can have somebody like Aristotle, who is, the Rambam says that he was on such a level of seichel, he was almost on the level of nevuah. But he was a kofer. And he was a kofer because if Aristotle was judging you in a life and death case, and you knew that somebody deposited $1 million in Aristotle's bank account, you wouldn't want him to be the judge. And so bribery blinds the eyes of the wise. And that's the nisoyon of emunah. In order for a person to be a maimon, he doesn't need a lot of intelligence, but what he does need is objectivity. There's a mitzvah of Anochi Hashem Elokecha that we said last week, according to some Rishonim, the Rambam included, that's a mitzvah deraisa to believe in Hashem. Even if you hold that it's not a mitzvah deraisa, everybody agrees that you're still obligated to do so. And the question is, how you obligate somebody to do so? If a person believes in God already, then you don't need to command him. If a person doesn't believe in God, then what good is commanding him? He doesn't believe he's commanded. And the Rishonim, Rabbi Chizdoy Kreshkash, asks this as a kasha on the Rambam, and he says that therefore there's no mitzvah of emunah. Obviously, a person has to believe, but it's not a mitzvah deraisa because it doesn't make sense to have such a mitzvah. The Teretz, according to Rabbi Chanan, is that the mitzvah of emunah is that you are a judge or you're a juror, and you see the evidence in front of your face and somebody deposited $10 million into your bank account. And the mitzvah is for you to ignore the bribe and look objectively at the evidence itself. Look objectively at the evidence above and beyond the benefits that you have to believe a certain way. That's the mitzvah of emunah. It's not that Hashem doesn't give us any wiggle room for denial, to deny his existence. There's absolutely no room for it. That's not the Nisoyan. The Nisoyan is not that Hashem gives us reason to doubt. Excuse me. It's that Hashem gives us no reason to doubt. There's no room for doubt logically, but there is room for denial. Hashem gives us a Nisoyan, and the Nisoyan is, will we be in denial about Hashem's existence? So if a person wants to believe in Hashem, if a person wants to find the truth, the lesson is that a person has to first develop and perfect his midas. He has to want to find the truth. If a person is not willing to sacrifice in order to find the truth, then he's vulnerable to the shaychad. And this is why in Torah, If we're looking for role models and we're looking to identify our Gedolei Yisrael and looking to identify our Torah authorities, it's not enough just to have somebody that knows a lot of Torah. There has to be somebody who is tremendously perfected in his midas and tremendously disciplined, not only because that makes him righteous and righteousness is a requirement as well, but because without that level of righteousness, such a person is not likely to find the truth. Somebody who doesn't have great midas, somebody who won't sacrifice for the truth, somebody who's not willing to forego personal benefit in favor of what's right, somebody who's not willing to be moser nefesh, somebody who doesn't have that strength of character to accept the truth no matter how painful the truth is, no matter what cost the truth has for him, such a person can't be a Torah authority. Because how in the world is such a person ever supposed to find the emes? He won't be able to do it. Torah is Hashem Tamimo. The Torah of Hashem is perfect. Chazal say, Ema Sahi Tamimo. When is the Torah of Hashem perfect? When is Torah Tamim? Mishashiyotzis Mipi Tamim. It's tamima mishashiyotis mipi tamim. When it emanates from righteous people, the Torah is pure when it emanates from pure people. Because somebody that doesn't have the right midas, that doesn't have the right self-sacrifice, such a person is not likely to come to the truth. And every time you ask somebody to be a Torah authority, you're asking him to be a judge and a juror. And you want the judge and the juror to be objective. Yismach Moshe said of art, and the art only works, by the way, if you daven nusach svar. Nusach Ashkenaz won't work. Lu'umosom mishabchim v'oimrim. Well, lu'umosom, if somebody does something against his own interests, lu'umosom mishabchim v'oimrim, such a person is praiseworthy. If somebody develops a shita, a philosophy, a Torah philosophy, let's say, and by some strange coincidence, this Torah philosophy just happens to benefit him a lot. He happens to allow him to get what he wants, to do what he wants. So, you know what? There's a big likelihood that it's a distortion. If a person has a Torah philosophy that makes things more difficult for him, that is against his own personal interests, that's lu'umosam, then mishabchim, then such a person is praiseworthy. And if you look, you can find and you can see with your own, with our own two eyes, we can see how many philosophies of Torah have incorporated the biases of things in the non-Jewish world, and these philosophies are the result not of objective thinking, but of wishful thinking rather than objective thinking. So, for example, if let's say I have a philosophy that by some coincidence allows me a lot of the perceived privileges, a lot of the privileges that I believe the Goyim have. You know, to be a Jew, in some people's minds, takes a lot of sacrifice. And it's very easy for a person to distort the Torah in such a way that he could create a philosophy for himself that allows him all those privileges that he believes the Goyim have. So, if let's say I'm ashamed because I live in a modern world and everybody in the modern world, everybody knows the world is billions of years old, and somebody who doesn't believe that the world is billions of years old, somebody who believes the world is 6,000 years old, is looked at as some kind of fanatic. I remember some non-Jewish person once asked me what Rosh Hashanah is about. So you don't tell non-Jewish people Torah. But I said, Dersha, today's the day that God created Adam. God created Adam today? Yeah. I said, yeah, 6,000 years ago. So he tells me, 6,000 years ago, God created Adam today? 6,000 years ago? And he looked at me like I'm crazy. So I looked at him like he's an apikiris. And he was apikiris, but I wasn't crazy. But they look at you like you're crazy if you think the world is 6,000 years old. So what can you do? So you can read into the Torah. Of course, it's a distortion. But there's a shaychad. You're ashamed that you believe the world is 6,000 years old. So now you read into the Torah, the Torah can believe the world is 5 billion years old. And by no coincidence, now you don't have to be ashamed. Of course, you objectively saw that in the Torah, of course. And of course, you were honest about it and objective about it. And by some coincidence, now you don't have to be ashamed in front of the Goyim. Or maybe you want to be a nationalist. The Jews are wandering people. We wander in Golis from nation to nation. From place to place. We get kicked out of places. We go to places. Happened for 2,000 years. And maybe now you want your own country. And maybe now you want to be able to show the people in Poland and the people in France and the people in Italy. The Jews are a nation as well, just like any other nation. So you create a philosophy and you read into the Torah, of course, objectively, that no, it's the Jews supposed to have their own nation and their own country and their own army. And the Jews are now just like anybody else. And of course, you're not embarrassed anymore. You're now normal. You're equal to everybody else. And of course, it's a coincidence that your philosophy of Torah that you quote-unquote honestly figured out allows you to be just like the Goyim. And of course, you can tell. There's some people who are predictable. They're chumras and they're coolers. You can predict how they're going to paskin shailas. So if you're talking about, for example, let's say the prohibitions of men and women to mingle. So everybody knows in the modern world that's looked upon as, I know, it's middle age. That men and women should be separate. What kind of thing is this? It's chauvinistic and it's wrong and all of this. And then you put women behind the machitza. Oh, there, the women behind the machitza, and you discriminate against them, and to separate men and women, how could you do such a thing? Everybody knows that nowadays we don't believe in that. So, of course, somebody could read into the Torah that all of that is not necessary. And, of course, by coincidence, he thinks he really read it into the Torah, and he could read into it. By coincidence, he gained a lot, and now he's not embarrassed and he's not ashamed. Not to mention the other peripheral benefits that he ends up having from that. Of course, that's where it comes to things like the mingling of men and women, which in the modern world is frowned upon. On the other hand, if it comes to some new scientific discovery that our avos never had, and to uproot the certain principles that we have believed for hundreds and hundreds and maybe even thousands of years. So, of course, that's the way the scientific modern world works. There's new discoveries, and everything that we know, everything that last generation knows gets uprooted by the next generation, the previous generation gets uprooted by the next generation, and it's choshev, it's valuable, it's very prominent, it's great. If you do it, you're just like the rest of the world. And so, scientific discoveries... You read in scientific discoveries that contradict what our Chazal say. So, of course, Chazal were wrong. And you read into the Torah that Chazal don't have to be right. And, of course, it's objective. The fact that you are now the same, that your ideas of that modern discoveries uproot previous traditions, that's today's modern philosophy, that by coincidence, now you believe in what or the Goyim believe, that was objective. Of course, if you discover some new mitzvah that nobody knew about, by some scientific discovery, nobody knew that there was Tchelis ever, and now you finally found it through new scientific discoveries, of course you're going to be Machmir. You're going to be Mekel in wherever tradition says one way, you're going to say Mekel against tradition, you're going to be Machmir against tradition, and wherever going against what our parents and grandparents knew and did, wherever that's Mekel, you're going to be Mekel, wherever that's Machmir, you're going to be Machmir. By coincidence, you're going to be as predictable as the sunrise. Now, of course, a person's going to say that he reads all this into the Torah. But objectivity, Lumosa Meshabchim V'yomrim, objectivity would tell us that it's pretty obvious that what's happening here is not objective at all. It's shoychad yaver any pikchim. If somebody wants to be like the goyim, if somebody has incorporated into his philosophy the modern goyisha ideas, it's going to affect his thinking because he has what to gain. He's not embarrassed. He's modern. And he can hold his head high on the college campuses, and he can hold his head high amongst professors, and he can hold his head high amongst the Germans and the French. You're equal to them. You have a nation. You have science. You have all of this. You don't believe in any of this fundamentalist stuff, and the women are not barefoot in the kitchen, and you're just like them. And of course, Sheikhed Yaver any Pikhed. And it goes as far, it depends how far you're willing to go. Some people are just willing to distort the Torah in order to take the Sheikhad, and some people are willing to be Kofim in order to take the Sheikhad. And this is Reb Elchanan's answer, that Sheikhad Yavre Ne Pikhim. Kofim is Sheikhad. One thing you should know about Kofim. A lot of people have a misimpression. They think that believing in the Torah, you need faith, and to be an apikairis, so that's if you use reason. And if you want to be a maimin, so then the mitzvah, the faith, has to override reason. Oh no. The Beis Halevi writes that if you take a look at all the kofrim have one thing very much in common. You know what that is? Emuna pshuta. There's no reasoning behind them. The Kofrim are true believers. They're fundamentalists. They believe, they hear something in the street, some professor writes something, and they believe it. The Beis Halevi says that if you take a look at the Kofrim in his days, he says they are all ibegloiba. They're all like fanatical believers. There's no reasoning in Kfira. It's all Amuna Pshuta. They're true believers. And they're true believers because they want to be true believers. That's all. They say that human beings came from monkeys. So what's the evidence human beings came from monkeys? There's no evidence human beings came from monkeys. But one of the strongest pieces of evidence that they say there is that they take a look, they have what they call vestigial organs. Vestigial organs are parts of the human being that they have no purpose. And why would God create something with no purpose? So, it must be that there's no creator. Now, when I was a kid, my mother told me how when she was a kid, how they used to, every time somebody got tonsillitis, how they used to tear out your tonsils You also got your tonsils out. Okay, so it's not only so long ago. Got their tonsils out, and my mother told me that they used to give you your tonsils in a bottle to bring them home, as I said, because they believe there's no purpose for the tonsils. They believe there's no purpose for an appendix, and they believed. So listen to the arrogance, the gaiva of these people. These scientists, that chas v'sholom, they should come to any conclusion without experimentation. Is there any scientific proof that these organs have no purpose? How in the world can you prove such a thing? Did they do an experiment in a laboratory to decide that these organs have no purpose? No. So how did they decide this? How did they decide this? Because they, in their great wisdom, can't figure out a reason for this organ that's a proof that it has no purpose. If they can't figure out a reason, that's a proof it has no reason. Now, the fact that historically they are not batting 1,000, these guys, that doesn't mean anything to them. It's still proof. The fact that they can't figure out a reason means it has no reason. There's no proof, but there's a reason. It's clearly anybody that can accept such a thing. And all the other rayas are not any better. Shaychad yavre any pikhim, that's all it is. Kfir is emuna pshuta. There's no reasoning at all. You look outside, you see these professors, they believe the world's billions of years old, they believe the world comes from monkeys. They're fanatics. They're fundamentalists, that's all they are. They're emuna pshuta. Jews use their head. Kfirim, ibagloiber, that's what they are. Now, you don't need any big philosophy for this, to figure out that the existence of Hashem and the things that we discussed last week about Hashem. You look in the commentary, Kina Soifrim, on the Sefer HaMitzvahs, and he distinguishes between the philosophy of the Greeks, that was a controversial thing, that we're not getting involved in that, as opposed to, he says, quote, Iyun sichli amiti, betoldois moifsiois, lekuchois mehakdomois hechrochiois umuskolois. He says that basically simple logic that no ben das, he says no human being can disagree with. Reb Elchanan says as well, you don't need to be a big philosopher to prove that God exists. The Ran, we quoted last week in Drosha Saran, says that the fact that there was that the world was created by Mukhrach HaMetzias is obvious to anybody, anybody who thinks about it, and EF Shalach Loikalov B'Shum Oifin, it's not possible to disagree with it. You don't need any to be a big philosopher. It's just a question of being objective versus taking shaychad. The Yismach Moshe has a teretz to the kasha that's very similar to Reb Elchanan. Very similar, but not exactly identical. And he adds a kasha. According to Rabbi Chasdoi, if you're going to say that Amuna can't be a mitzvah, because manavshach, if a person believes, then you don't have to command him. And if he doesn't believe, you can't command him. That Amuna is not a mitzvah, because a mitzvah can only be something you choose, then enoch enami, it's not a mitzvah, but a person would not be entitled to get any reward for Amuna altogether. Yet clearly that's not so. Tzadik b'emunasa yichyeh. The Jews were taken out of Egypt, b'schus Amuna. Amuna is a big schus. So if you're going to say that Amuna cannot be something that you choose, how could you get rewarded? Never mind a mitzvah. Let's say it can't be a mitzvah. It's not a mitzvah. But how could you be rewarded for something that you don't choose? And Yismach Moshe has a different teretz to the kasha about how is it possible that all these kofrim exist. And to paraphrase the Yismach Moshe, I'm going to come back to our moshel of a jury. So the moshel that we use for Reb Elchanan's teretz is that somebody gave the jurors shoychad. Here's another way you can disqualify a jury. Let's say your life is at stake, and you have the jury. And you found out that the jury read all the newspaper articles about your case. And the jury discussed your case on the street. Would you trust them? Oh, no. Juries have to be sequestered. The juries have to be, we have to make sure that they don't know anything about the case before you go on a jury, so they screen you. Do you have any reason why you think you won't be objective over here? If you want to get out of jury duty, So everybody knows, you give them all the reasons, you won't be objective. Oh, I had a grandmother like this and I had a grandfather like that. Or, you know what, oh, I read about this case. And you say you read about this case in the newspaper, forget about it. You can't read about the case in the newspaper. Now, I have a question. If free inquiry is a help for finding the truth, in modern day society, the more you read whatever you read, the better it is. So I don't understand. The juror should come back. And he said, why are you postulating me from the jury? Why are you disqualifying me? The more I read the newspapers. I spoke about this. I had free inquiry. I'm reading all sorts of things about it. That should be a mile, an advantage for my qualifications in the jury. Not these ignorant savages that don't know anything about the case and are just going to hear the evidence in court. I'm an educated man. I educated myself about the issue. Why am I disqualified? Teretz is that the idea that the more you read, that free inquiry helps you perceive the truth is bogus. It's not true. It depends what you read. Everything a person reads affects him. And if you read something that's biased or that's slanted, or that doesn't have the balance of evidence, now you are biased and slanted, and you don't have the balance of evidence, and you won't be able to see it. You, Mr. Professor, that's telling me that you want to read all the apikorsis in the world, and you want to hear all the kfira in the world, and you want to have all this free inquiry, you would disqualify a juror if he did the exact same thing in judging your life. A human mind is very impressionable. And we have to be very, very careful what we see, what we hear, what we read. Mikol mishmor, the Pasuk says, from everything that you protect. And we protect a lot of things. At home, we lock our doors at night. Why do you think about somebody that leaves his doors open at night and his windows open at night? And say he's being foolish. We protect our money. Identity theft. You got to make sure you don't do this and you don't do that and you don't make mistakes. We protect our health. We don't cross busy intersections on red lights. Mikol mishmor, from all the things that we protect, says the Pasuk in Mishlei Netzor Libecha, protect your mind. Protect your mind more than you protect anything else. Ki mimenu, because from your mind, Noitzos Chaim, comes life. Your life depends upon what you think. What type of life form you are depends upon your deus. You can have two people. One's a maimon, one's a tzaddik, one's a koifer. One gets life, one gets death. They're two completely different life forms, the maimon and the koifer, because they have two completely different minds. Protect your minds more than anything else. And says the Yismach Moshe, that the mitzvah of Anoichi Hashem Elokecha is not that you should believe in God, because believing in God, you don't need a mitzvah. But the mitzvah is that even though it's so obvious that God exists, and more than that, that Jews naturally believe in God, the Rambam says, nevertheless, a human being, if he wants to, can proactively tear that belief out of him. And he quotes the Pasuk, Mikol Mishmor Netzor Libecha. A person can proactively tear belief, tear emunah out of himself. The Rambam says, Rambam Hilchos Avodah Zarah, Sforim Rabim, Chibru Oivdei Koichavim. The idol worshippers wrote a lot of books about their religions. God commanded us not to read those books. Not to think about it, not to speak about it, not to have anything to do with this information about these other religions. Even to stare at the idol that they worship is osur. Shnema al tifnu el ha'olilim. And it's, the Rambam says the reason is, afal pi sheinato oivdo, even though you're not going to worship this thing, you're not allowed to do it. Shadovrzeh goyim liyifonois achrecha. V'lasois k'moishahein oisin. By reading their books, by even staring at, by getting all this information, you're going to come, you're going to get a bias. You're a juror. And this, the Rambam is the judge, and he's telling us that we're not allowed to read these biased, misinformed sources of information because it'll cause us a bias and we won't be able to judge things properly. One thing you have to know about Apikorsis, it can never be true. Somebody told me a story, I don't believe the story can't be true, about the Vilna Gaon, that the Vilna Gaon learned all the Chochmas except one Chochmah he didn't learn, a guy tells me. He says he knows this from a reliable source because that Chochmah was Apikorsis and the Gaon didn't want to learn Apikorsis. I told him it makes no sense. Because in order for a Chochmah to be Chochmah, it has to be true. Fiction is not Chochmah. And Apikorsis, in order to be Apikorsis, can't be true. If Apikorsis... Apikorsis has to be against the Torah, otherwise it wouldn't be an Apikorsis. And if it's true, it wouldn't be against the Torah. Apikorsis can't be true and Chochmah can't be fiction. So there's no such thing as a Chochmah that's Apikorsis. All the stuff that's Apikorsis is not information, it's misinformation. Why are you scared of information, somebody may ask? Why is the Rambam mastering information? The Rambam's not scared of information. The Rambam's telling us to be scared of misinformation. And of course we're scared of misinformation. You're a juror. You're not allowed to read the newspapers. You're not allowed to read everything every Tom, Dick, and Harry writes. Because that's going to bias you. It's going to create a distortion in your mind. And therefore, that's what the Yismach Moshe says, that there are people who create biases in their minds and proactively tear the Emunah out, and they consciously claim, I don't want to believe. Now, of course, it really boils down to the same thing as Reb Elchanan, why a person would want to do this. A person would be motivated to do this because of the Shoychad. But here we're talking about, Yismach Moshe, we're talking about not only should we not proactively be motivated not to do it, but we should not do anything that's going to cause us to lose our Emunah. The Divrei Yoel has a kasha on the Yismach Moshe. The Rambam says that this is all also because of Al Tifno El Ha'alilim. The Yismach Moshe says it's because of Anoichi Hashem Elokecha. So we already, why is the Yismach Moshe, he says, saying that the mitzvah of Emunah, Anoichi Hashem Elokecha, says not to proactively do things that are going to destroy your Emunah? The Rambam says that's a different mitzvah. Al Tifno El Ha'alilim, right? The Rambam didn't say Shnema Anoichi Hashem Elokecha. So there's two terutzim. One teretz is that, like the poskim say, that if it's a lois asay, according to the Rambam, you're not allowed to do the lois asay. But if there's a suffix, if this is osur, according to the Rambam, in HaTorah, you're allowed to do it. But a mitzvah asay, you wouldn't be allowed to do. So therefore, if it would only be osur al tifnu el ha'alilim, a suffix would still be mutter min HaTorah. Something that's a suffix that will bias your Emunah. Comes Anoichi Hashem Elokecha, that even something that's a suffix that'll bias your Emunah is also min HaTorah. Second teretz is that the Rambam is saying, don't think about the Avodah Zarah. Don't occupy your mind with the Avodah Zarah information. But there are other things that a person can do that's kind of like second degree destructive to your Emunah. Like being friends with idol worshippers, or being friends with people that do this. And even though you are not proactively at that point in time occupying your mind with the apikorsis, however, it's going to happen. Being friends with these people is also damaging to your Emunah, and that is the mitzvah of Anoichi Hashem according to the Yismach Moshe. But one way or the other, the mitzvah of Anoichi Hashem tells us not to do things that proactively destroy Emunah. The Rambam says that Jews naturally believe in Hashem. Now, I don't know if this means one of two things. I don't know if it means that there's some natural Emunah inside Jews that they don't even have to think about it, but they believe in Hashem. Jews will be, even the biggest Rosher will be Moiser Nefesh. In the olden days, he was Moiser Nefesh al Kiddush Hashem. Or does it mean that Jews naturally see these simple Seichel Dikah proofs that HaKadosh Baruch Hu exists? So I'm not sure if this means a chush or this means Seichel. But one way or the other, the Rambam says that somebody that doesn't believe in HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Einoi Mizera Anoshim Hohem, and Lo Yomdu Avoisov Al Har Sinai. It's not possible for a Jew not to believe in Frumkeit, the Rambam says. Now, somebody's going to ask me, what about all these Jews that don't believe? So I'll tell you how this works. Every day we make a bracha in the morning, Shloya Sani Goy. We make a bracha Shloya Sani Oved, and we make a bracha Shloya Sani Isha. The Mefarshim ask, why do we make the same bracha day after day? You don't make the same bracha on an apple twice. First, if you eat a new apple, then you make a new bracha. So if I made a bracha Shloya Sani Goy yesterday, nothing happened in between that I was born again, that I should make a new bracha Shloya Sani Goy. I was born a man one time in my life, so I should make a bracha one time in my life, Shloya Sani Isha. How can you make the bracha more than once? Shloya Sani Eved, all right, I can understand, I could become an Eved today, but still, there was nothing there's nothing that indicated that I would become an Eved, so why do I make these brachas twice? Mogen Avraham's Teretz is like this. That at night, your neshama goes up and comes down, right? If you're not fortunate enough, if you're not zoicha, you don't get the same neshama coming down as you did when it went up. You can get the neshama of a goy. You can get the neshama mixed a goy and a Jew. And we make a bracha, shloya sani goy. It means we thank Hashem that we didn't get that neshama. Now the Ramak says, he's quoting the Ramak, the Magen Avraham, and the Ramak says that there are certain signs where somebody, a Jew, can wake up one day with the neshama of a goy. He says, sometime, for example, some people, you see that suddenly they're not like a high madrega, suddenly, boom, they go down. What happened? He says, they got a different neshama. Now, don't go home and use this lemaisa, because you got to know what it means, suddenly went down, what it means went down, go down a little, go down a lot. But one way or the other, it's possible for a person to wake up in the morning with a neshama of a guy. And when the Rambam says that Lo Yomdu Avoisov Al Har Sinai, it doesn't necessarily mean, doesn't mean that chronologically, that Lo Yomdu Avoisov Al Har Sinai, that biologically his father's father's father was on Har Sinai. It means that spiritually, he got cut off from Zera Yisrael already. There are a lot of times we find, the Arizal says that nowadays, he says that the... There are Erev Rav amongst the Jews. Erev Rav amongst the Jews. And the Arizal says that nowadays, in his days, the majority of the generations from the Erev Rav. The Zohar says that there's five Madregas of Erev Rav, and the lowest Madrega of Erev Rav is Amalek. The Gro says that Balei Machloikis, they're Amalek. The lowest level of the Erev Rav. And these are amongst the Jews. And the Mefarshim say that it doesn't mean that physically there are Malekim amongst the Jews, but spiritually, in terms of Neshamas, a Jew can end up with a polluted Neshama that it could be considered a Malek in this respect. The Ramban, at the beginning in Netzavim, you'll see the Ramban gives a guarantee that anybody who's not an Oyver Avoid Zara cannot have a child that's an Oyver Avoid Zara. Mishayrish Mosoik lo Yetze Mar. V'chol asher lovovoi sholem im Hashem hanechbed v'lo yihir klal eitzel avoid Zara lo yoylid moidabo, the Ramban says. And then he asks a question, it happens? He says, Kiemes hadover soid godol lo yuchel lefarish, it's a big secret, I'm not telling you. And the Mefarshim on the Ramban say that the big secret is that spiritually, the son gets the neshama of some other lineage. That he gets cut off from his father's lineage, so he's not exactly directly spiritually from this father. People's neshamas can come, they can go, all sorts of things can happen. If somebody wants to be a kofer, he's literally mamish destroying his own neshama. Not only is he being over on the worst aveira in the world, the worst aveira in the Torah is apikarsis. And it's Mefarsha Gemara. The Gemara says, I mentioned this Gemara in Shul many times, this Raya. The Gemara says that a lady, Gemara Avodah Zarah, a lady came to Rav Chisda, and she said, Rebbe, I did a lot of aveiras. He says, what aveiras did you do? And she says, Hakal shabakalish yasi. See, the smallest of the small of the averus that I did. Bini hakotan mebini hagadol. My younger son is the son of my older son. That's the smallest of the small. So the Gemara says, so what could she have done already? Compared to which, that's the smallest of the small? Says the Gemara, apikorsis, minus. The Gemara didn't find any other possible avera that compared to which, gili arayis, incest is considered hakal shebekalois. That's how bad it is, apikorsis. The person who's a koifer takes his Jewish nature and rips it out, tears away his lineage away from the Jewish people, tears himself away from the tradition of Har Sinai, tears himself mamish literally out of Klal Yisrael. And that's why the Yetzirah for everything in the world, the Yetzirah obviously wants Jews to do all the Averis that it can get him to do, but for all the Averis that it can get him to do, the biggest success for the Yetzirah is to get a Jew to be a Koifer. The Yetzirah is so strong for a person not to believe, or not even not to believe. It's so strong that a person, he should tell a person that belief is a matter of choice, and that you can't prove, it's not a matter of seichel, you can't prove the existence of God. That, you know what, I believe, but in the back of my mind, I have a migu. Even believers, they say, I believe in God, I just think, I don't believe that it could be proven. There's the Yetzirah, the guy wants a migu. He wants to be able to say, you know what, I believe, but I have a right to say I don't if I want. If one day I don't believe, I can say, I happen to believe. Happening to believe is not good enough. Like the Chazon Ish said, Emunah, 1 + 1 = 2. You know 1 + 1 = 2? That's Emunah. Say, I don't see how 1 + 1 = 2. I don't see how you could prove it, but I take your word for it that 1 + 1 = 2. The Yetzirah wants people to do that too. We have a question coming in. We have a question coming in on Instant Messenger. Rabbi, it's very nice what you're saying, but Hasidim don't believe in it. Hasidim believe that Emunah in God is not something that could be proven. Emunah in God is just something that we believe. Okay. Rafi, do me a favor. In there, there's the Sefer Meir Einei Chachamim, Chelik Beis, right in front of you. To the right. Next group of Svarim. Next shelf, to the right. To the right. Right there, to the left. Meir Einei Chachamim. It's right, one sefer to the left. One more to the left. There you go. Meir Einei Chachamim, the Ostrov Tzareba. He's Hasidish, by the way. In Chelik Beis, in Meir Einei Chachamim, he has something called Drush shel Chof Beis Oisius, a drusha from 22 paragraphs on the first Mishnah, Mishnah Rishonishim Sechta Brochus. And he says that there are two, over here he says there's two drachim in Avodas Hashem. He says there's, and he says the Chasam Sofer says the same thing. Now actually you should know the Chasam Sofer is also a Chasidish Sefer, the Derech of Chasidus. But the Ostrov, he wasn't a Rebbe. The Ostrov Rebbe was a Rebbe. He says, there's one derech, now Kriya Shema Shel Arvis. Kriya Shema Shel Arvis, and there's Kriya Shema Shel Shachris. Kriya Shema Shel Arvis is to believe in Hashem like night. It's still dark. Kriya Shema Shel Shachris is to believe in Hashem through Chakira. He says, each one has a milah. The milah of Chakira is that you'll be able to be makarif people and explain to them why they should believe. The milah of Kriya Shema Shel Arvis is that Chakira, you only believe until the point that you could reason on your own. Anything beyond that, you won't. So first you need Kriya Shema Shel Arvis. That's why Kriya Shema Shel Arvis comes first. First you need Kriya Shema Shel Arvis. You need to commit yourself to believe Amun Pshuta, and then comes Kriya Shema Shel Shachris. You should, it's a Mila, if you believe Derech Chakira too. Now again, we're not talking Greek philosophy. We're talking about simple rayas from the Seichel. 22 oises, and he says over here a vort, that the Welt knows in the name of the Chafetz Chaim. In the Ein Kelekenu, it says Ein Kelekenu, right? Ein Kadeinenu, then Mi Kelekenu, Mi Kadeinenu. Which is the question, which is the answer? The question is Mi Kelekenu, the answer is Ein Kelekenu. So why are we saying the answer before the question? So he says that no problem. If you want to ask Mi Kelekenu and you want to be Choker in Amunah, no problem. But first, you have to commit yourself to Ein Kelekenu. If you believe first Ein Kelekenu, then you can ask Mi Kelekenu. Fair enough. It's poshut, because if you're going to ask questions and everything like that, so there's always a risk. You don't go into a burning fire to save somebody until you protect yourself, until you get training as a fireman. Otherwise, you're going to kill yourself. That's one chosid. Divrei Yoel, he's also a Rebbe. It's Parshas Yisro. He says, Pshat Megemar and Brochus. The Gemara over there is talking about the Brocha HaMoitzi Lechem in Haaretz. And there the Gemara says that, according to one man, the Yomar, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, Kidafikno Lechu, when I take you out of Egypt, Avidnu luchu milso, I'm going to do things for you. I mean, I'm going to make miracles for you. Ki hechi di yadisu di anahu di ifkas yaschoin. In order for you to know that I was the one that took you out of Egypt. I'm going to make miracles. I'm going to do things for you to know I took you out of Egypt. What does it mean? Didn't the Jews know that Hashem took them out of Egypt? So he says, Kvar kosvu besvarim hakdoishim. The svarim hakdoishim write, Al haposuk da es elokei avicha viavdehu. Da es elokei avicha, know Hashem viavdehu, and then worship Him. She noisif al ha'amuna mitzad ha'kabbalah. Added, besides amuna from tradition, tzorech lehishtadel, we need to put in an effort, lahasiga biyadiya sichlius, v'raya muchshis. Besides, in addition to the Kabbalah amuna from tradition, we need to put in an effort to obtain amuna through intellect type of knowledge and sensory proofs. V'zenikri yediya. That's what it means, yediya. Da. Eselokei avicha. Not just you should believe, but you should know. And therefore, v'ulai ze kavonas ha-gemar. That's what the Gemara maybe means. She'tavoyu lidei yediya brura b'hasoga sichlis noisif al ha-amuna mitzad ha-kabbalah. That I'm going to give you these miracles that you're not only going to have emuna, but you're going to have first-hand sensory information. Now I know, when you say chassidim, you don't mean chassidim. You mean Reb Nachman Breslov. All over Reb Nachman's Sfarim, he talks about emuna pshuta, emuna pshuta. But you should know like this. Reb Nachman, first of all, is moideh, he agrees, everybody agrees that the existence of God can be proven, and he also writes a proof too. I think it's in the Sichas Haran that Reb Nachman writes, we mentioned last week, the proof that you can't have an infinite regression of causes. Reb Nachman says that we don't need it, of course, people should not need proofs, but happens to be, I'll tell you a proof, Reb Nachman says. If the world wouldn't have had a creator and would have been here for an infinite amount of time, that means everything would have happened already. Because no matter how much time you would need for anything, any given thing to happen, there was that amount of time already. So in other words, if let's say there's a need 100 billion years for the world to blow up, well, the world would have blown up. No matter how much time everything needs to occur, it would have occurred already because it was already here for an infinite amount of time. Clearly, we don't have an infinite amount of time in the past, because if we already have an infinite amount of time in the past, what's left to do now? So first of all, Rav Nachman's moida. Secondly, Rav Nachman, you have to understand about the Chassidish Sfarim, that each Chassidish Sefer was meant as a specific derech for the needs of their specific chassidim. Rav Nachman writes, Dama shetoshev l'apikoyus. You know how to answer the apikoyus? How to answer the apikoyus inside you, Rav Nachman says. A person should learn Torah l'shmo, and a person should get rid of all his taivas, and a person should be yigi of our melis b'toyin, and it's wonderful. And halavai, everybody should do that. But Lamaisa, if after all that somebody still has a question, then he needs this. A person should not have to need proof. It's not only Chassidim. The Ravid in the Amunah HaRoma, not the Ravid, the Baal HaSogas, the first Ravid, he writes also that all these philosophical proofs are only for people that need them. If you don't need them, then you don't need them. Then it's even better. But if you need them, then they're there. And nowadays, no problem. If somebody is Yogav Amal Batayra and he has a Lev Tohar, and the natural Amunah that the Rambam says is the gift from Hashem to all Jews, and he has it such that all these proofs do nothing for him, fine, I'm not talking to such a person. He doesn't need what I'm saying. But if somebody is not on that Madrega, then that's the difference between Yediyah and Amunah. Reb Nachman has a different pshat in Yediyah. And these Sfarim, Chassidim themselves, say this is what Yediyah means. That's all. At this point, we're going to take questions on this topic through Instant Messenger, or topic questions from the audience. On this topic. Yes?
There are topics that, there are concepts that we are not able to understand rationally, and we just have to, I guess, take it on Amunah Pshuta, like things that our finite minds cannot fathom, such as why Hashem created the world and things like that.
So what's the question?
I guess you're making a point that the Apikuris only has Amunah Pshuta, and that we rely on reason, but there are certain things that we also need to have.
Okay, question. The Apikuris, I said, relies on Amunah Pshuta, but we rely on reason. Isn't it true that we have things that we rely on Amunah Pshuta too? For example, why Hashem created the world? The answer is no. No. We mentioned last week that there's a difference between understanding something and knowing for a fact that it's true. There are things, certainly, that we can't understand because we can't conceptualize them. But that doesn't mean that we believe in Amunah Pshuta in the truth of those things. For example, a blind person can never understand the difference between blue and red, no matter how you explain it to him. But he could prove it on paper. Light has different waves and the different sizes for the waves, and blue and red on paper look like two different things. So he can prove it. He's just never going to understand it. Are you going to say that that's Amunah Pshuta, that there is a difference? No. Not Amunah Pshuta, that there is a difference. Just, he doesn't understand, he can't conceptualize what the difference is. But is it Amunah Pshuta? No, he could prove there's a difference. He just won't understand it. Amunah Pshuta doesn't mean that you won't understand something. Amunah Pshuta means that the truth of a given fact you can't prove. When you say, why did God create the world? Amunah Pshuta means what? Amunah Pshuta, you're asking why, not you're asking what. Amunah Pshuta, Amunah is Amunah in facts. You're not mentioning a fact. If you say, fact, God created the world, do we have Amunah Pshuta? No. You could have Amunah Pshuta, but it could be proven. Now you want to know why God created the world. Amunah Pshuta is not an appropriate answer to a question of why. It's an appropriate answer to a question of what. Amunah Pshuta is facts. Amunah Pshuta is not like reasons. Once you know the fact, you know what? I don't even need to know the reason. And it's not true that we have Amunah Pshuta why God created the world. I have no idea why God... I know why God created the world. I know that God created the world in order to do chesed. But what motivated God, there's no such thing. It's not Amunah Pshuta. If you were to give me an answer to that question, and then I could say, can either have Amunah Pshuta in that fact, that answer, or it's something that I know be yediyah. But just because I don't know why this and this has happened doesn't mean that that's a emunah pshuta, because once I can prove that it happened, that's all I'm interested in now. The Koyfrim have emunah pshuta in the facts. They believe that there's no God. That's emunah pshuta. We believe that the world has a creator. It could be emunah pshuta, doesn't have to be emunah pshuta. Now you want to know, well, why did God create the world? That's like saying why some scientific fact that they don't know the answer to yet, and maybe they'll never know. That's not emunah pshuta. Once you know a fact, you know a fact. Then there's a question of why is this true? That's not an issue of emunah, that's not an issue of yediyah, that's an issue of havona. There are certain things that we don't have havona. Granted, so what? But that's not the topic. The topic is emunah or yediyah. Havona about whys are a completely different thing. Any questions? Let's see what we have here. Let's see what we have over here. We have two different possibilities for the instant messengers. Rabbi, what do you think of the Eish HaTorah proofs to God? First of all, they're not the Eish HaTorah proofs. As far as I know, all the proofs that the Eish HaTorah people use to God, the Mishnah says that all fishes that have scales also have fins, things like that. The fact that Judaism is the only religion claims with uncontested claim amongst the Jews throughout history that Hashem came to the entire nation and gave them the Torah. None of this was originated by the Eish HaTorah people. The proof from Maimon Har Sinai in the Hakdama to the Sefer HaChinuch, he uses it. And other Rishonim do too. I have a question. You know, you'll take a look at all the religions. Let's take, the Christianity. So a Malach came to Yoshka's mother, or Yoshka's father. It wasn't his father. The husband of Yoshka's mother, and said, you're going to have your wife, who comes home pregnant, that she's going to give birth to God, or whatever it was. So now, wouldn't it be better for the Christians if instead of saying that a Malach came to this one person, why didn't they just make up a better story? A Malach came to all the Christians in the world and said, everybody, all Christians, worship Yoshka. Yoshka is the son of God. Shalom. Yoshka the Avodah Zorah, that's the real religion. Wouldn't it have been make more sense for them to do that? Especially since they're Moida, that Hashem came the first time to Tyre and Har Sinai in front of the whole nation. Why couldn't they, why limit yourself to one person? Why didn't they say there was another Maimon Har Sinai? The same thing with the Muslims. Every single religion in the world, none of them made up that story, which is a weird thing, because if I was going to make up a religion, I wouldn't want my religion just to be that the Borei Olam came to me and whispered in my ear, tell the whole world that here's the religion. I would want God to tell the whole world, follow Shapiro. Terrence says, you can't make up such a story. Because if you make up such a story, imagine, the head of the Christians are going to say, God came to all the Christians and say, follow Yoshka. They're going to say, well, how come nobody knows about this except you? 400 years after Kabbalah HaTorah, it was the days of David HaMelech. Everybody knows that in days of David HaMelech, the Jews believed in the Torah. Imagine, there were about, 600,000 Jews between the ages of 20 and 60. Another, that was men. So make another 600,000 of women, that's 1.2 million. Above 60, below 20, let's say 2.43 million people. About 2.43 million Jews, let's say, by Maimon Har Sinai. That's the population of what? I don't know. Queens? What's 3 million people? Brooklyn? Say Brooklyn's 3 million people? I don't know. Big city is 3 million people. So imagine that you were to tell somebody that 400 years ago, God came to this population, this whole city, and told them, your grandparents and your great-grandparents, and told them, believe in this whole Torah. Nobody would believe. Everybody would say, how come nobody heard about it except you? And forget about religions. There was no hoax in the world that was ever perpetrated that lasted more than a day or so, where people concocted a mass revelation of something. When they said that Martians landed in the Midwest, and they said it on the radio, it didn't last more than a day or so because somebody just found out from the people in the Midwest. It never happened. If you're going to make up a story, it's not possible to make up a hoax that involves a few million people unless they're all dead. But if the grandchildren and the great-grandchildren... So, and Judaism is the only religion that did such a thing. Only religion that ever claimed to have a mass revelation. Of course, because you can't make up a mass revelation. And all the things that all the deviant sects of Jews questioned, that Stukim didn't like Torah Shebaal Peh, other people didn't believe in the Gzeiros of Chachamim, whatever it is, but nobody questioned Kabbalah Satori from Har Sinai. Why didn't Yoshke say that? No, it's not true that Hashem said to follow the Torah in Har Sinai. Hashem said to follow Yoshke. Tertzis was history. Everybody knew that Hashem said on Har Sinai to follow the Torah. That's history. It was recorded history. Nobody was able to deny it. It's not Eish HaTorah. The Sefer HaChinuch in the introduction says it, and other people do. And as far as things like the fish and all these kind of proofs, they're also before Eish HaTorah. Take a look at the Sefer Eretz Tzvi from the Kozhik Lover Rav. He was a Rosh Hashiva in Chachmei Lublin. So in the Eretz Tzvi on Mayadim, Rafi, can I trouble you again? I'm sorry. Right on top of you, under the air conditioner, Eretz Tzvi, right over there by your finger, to the left. There it is, Eretz Tzvi. In the Sefer Eretz Tzvi on Mayadim, he has something in the back called, I think it's called Kuntres Emuna. Yalkut Emuna. Kuntres Yalkut Emuna. Miksav Yodoy, Ksav Yodoy Shehishirach Rav, from the Kozhik Lover Rav. He was a big goyin. And all of these proofs, and many more, from the fact that the Jews knew astronomy, and the Greeks were so nispol, they said the Jews must have Navu if they know this astronomy, to that fish with the scales and fins, and all of these things, they're in there. So, these are tried and true proofs. They work. I can't swear for every single one of them. But what we're saying here by the Shira, we said last week, those were only, nobody should think that that's all the proofs to our religion that exist. That's just a tip of the iceberg. I use that because it's in all the, it's in so many Sfarim of Rishonim, and that it proves specifically those things that we know about Hashem. There's Kulei Poshut, there's L'mayil min HaTeva, L'mayil min HaZman. But there are plenty of proofs out there to Judaism, and they're available for everybody. Any other questions?
Is that Kaifer because he doesn't believe in a Mnepshuta? Is that it? If you would explain to him, maybe he wouldn't be a Kaifer. Or he's also a Kaifer because even if he explained to him, he doesn't believe in it.
Okay, question. Is a person a Kaifer because nobody explained to him yet what the truth is, or is a kaifer only after you explained it to him? Is that the question?
Yeah. If he wouldn't believe in a minute pshuta, is he considered, and he has questions, is he considered a kaifer?
Right. If a person has questions, that a tinik shenish, but is he a kaifer? So I didn't say over the whole Rebbe Elchanan, but Rebbe Elchanan addresses that exact question. And he says, he quotes his Rebbe, Reb Chaim Briska, Nebuch ha'api kairus is oich ha'api kairus. That even though Tinik Shenishba can't be punished for something that he did, if he didn't know he wasn't supposed to do it, he also can't be rewarded for something that he didn't do. And Emuna is something that he doesn't have. And even if it's not his fault he doesn't have Emuna, he still doesn't have Emuna. But Rebbe Elchanan says that every 13-year-old, never mind the Tinik Shenishba, every 13-year-old is responsible for the mitzvah Noichi Hashem Lekecha. Aristotle didn't believe in our Hashem. Every 13-year-old kid, you know what a 13-year-old kid is? He's a baby. Every baby is obligated to believe in Hashem. How could that be? So the Teretz is that because you're allowed to have questions, but because the answers are so available and so poshut, and the alternative doesn't make any sense at all, the alternative that there is no Bariyola makes no sense. Therefore, everybody is responsible. Goyim, never mind Yid, Goyim are responsible for the Sheva Mitzvahs. Guy is responsible to believe. And not allowed to be oiv the avodah zarah. A guy is the biggest tinik shenishba. But even a guy has the access to this information because this is simple logic. Says Rabbi Chanan, if a person would be born as an adult, let's say you popped into this world at 20 years old, right? We're 20 years old. Let's say you popped into the world at 20 years old. You take a look at a tree. How could a person not be nispol? How could a person take a look at the tree and say, you know what, this thing came by accident? The only reason why people are kofrim is because either they don't think, and a person has a moral obligation to use his head. Either they don't think, or they don't want to think. And therefore, the answer to your question is that apikairis is apikairis, even if he's a tinik shenishba.
Regarding the argument for design,